from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, Andy Cohen is used to drama. Before he hosted his own Bravo TV show, he produced the Real Housewives reality series where he managed mascara streak meltdowns on and off camera. In his latest book, Superficial, he turns the lens on himself, sharing his diary entries about loneliness and his search for a relationship. The host of Watch What Happens Live gives us the scoop on his own off-screen life. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Talk host, author, and producer Andy Cohen joins us in studio for this Forum Hour. He's host and executive producer of Watch What Happens Live on Bravo and of the Real Housewives franchise. He also produces Then and Now with Andy Cohen on Bravo, and he's a winner of an Emmy and two Peabodys. He's also author of three books, Most Talkative, The Andy Cohen Diaries, and most recent, Superficial, More Adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. He curates and appears on Radio Andy on Sirius XM, a little to the right of where we are, not necessarily politically, so on 102 or on 122. And welcome him to this hour of Forum. Good to have
you. How are you?
Okay, good to see you.
Great to be here.
To have you here. I wanted to begin by talking with you, believe it or not, about Donald Trump. We're going to certainly talk about your book a good
deal. I've spent a lot of time talking about him.
Yeah, you did a lot of tweeting, in fact, which he does, of course, but during the campaign. And I want to talk about Trump mainly because we talked about him in the last hour and talked about how the media doesn't cover him. Let me actually give listeners an idea what you said about Trump. And you capped it by saying,
"What did I say?
I knew then," is what you said. And then goes back to a time when he offered you a commercial free flight, and you would prefer to take the commercial flight.
I hosted some beauty pageants for him when he was, doing what he was probably meant to do, which is run beauty pageants. And he offered me a ride from Vegas on his plane to New York, and I did decide to fly commercially instead because I didn't want to be beholden to him for anything. And I was like, I don't want to go in that gold plane. Please don't make me do it. So I didn't do it.
So you put out of your own pocket rather than
yes.
be beholden. But
yes.
I admire that. But I also admire, as many will, what you said during the campaign, a thin-skinned, flip-flopping orange sham who has perfectly manipulated the media. Media,
yes.
Which is what we were talking about in the last hour.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so... It's like a slow car crash that you can see happening in that meaning how it works with the media. It's like how it doesn't work. He settles a $25 million fraud case for Trump University. And then, but all anyone reports on is the big fracas with Pence at the musical Hamilton because Trump starts tweeting about Hamilton. So it's like... Yeah, I mean, you just can see how this keeps happening. And he doesn't seem to be getting off Twitter. And so it's like there will always be extra noise that takes away from all. It's like there's too much to cover almost right now, right?
That is true. And that's one of the formidable obstacles we were talking about in the last hour. But there are those who say Trump is a creation of reality TV, which is world, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, I think that that's not untrue. I mean, he's the reason that he resonated with a lot of people is that they viewed him. First of all, he's entertaining to watch to a lot of people. He's a straight people people consider him a straight talker. They, he cuts through the BS. Excuse me. Can I sneeze on KQED?
You can sneeze all you like. You can serial sneezer if you're so inclined.
Thank you. I mean, he knows. He's like P.T. Barnum. So he's a showman.
He is indeed. So are you, though.
Thanks. Oh, thanks.
No, I don't mean that in any pejorative way.
Maybe I'll run for
you
president.
You take it as a compliment.
Thank you. I am. No, I am.
You should take it as a compliment. And in fact, You have what they describe in Hollywood as Q factor, big time. I mean, the appeal you have, just thinking about this before we went on the air, I want to talk about some serious things with you as well, like reality TV and the whole franchise of Real Housewives and so forth. But there are many people who have pointed out, and even people within my own family, that there's something just very personable, boyish, sweet about you that captures people. And yet there's also obviously a pretty... smart and calculating guy behind all that. I mean, to produce shows, to work in, you worked in news, in fact.
I did. I was at CBS News for 10 years, from 90 to 2000.
And didn't want to be in front of the camera because you were worried about being cross-eyed?
No, I did want to be in front of the camera. And then someone said, oh, you're far too cross-eyed to be on camera. And then I'm going to say 17 years into my TV career is when I wound up starting to go on camera. So it's just, it's a very, I write about it a lot in my first book because it's an improbable yet organic and kind of, for me, beautiful story of how one thing led to another. And I did wind up on air.
It's a kind of a metamorphosis.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
And here you are kind of with an empire now, a bit of a phenomenon and a mogul to boot. And yet lamenting in your new book, no relationship, I'm lonely type of stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I do talk about that in the new book. I lift the veil off of a lot in the book. I mean, it's definitely kind of a deconstruction of fame in this moment in time in pop culture and what that means to be on every side of it, because I'm not only kind of living that, but I am making normal people famous. I am having famous people on my talk show every night and negotiating with them and their handlers about what lines I can cross and what lines I can't cross. And that line is ever clear every day of my life. And sometimes I do the wrong thing and I say the wrong thing. But
Also, do you hold yourself accountable in a tough way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm the biggest moron in the book, and I stick my foot in my mouth constantly. But I do talk about moments of loneliness and searching for what else is out there. And I kind of peel the veil off of my entire life in this book. It's pretty – I go pretty – as entertaining as it is, I go pretty deep with myself.
What about fame? I want to actually ask you about your thoughts about it. I remember well, Henry James called it the bitch goddess, which is a pretty tough way to describe it. But, you know, in many people's minds, it's transitory. It's superficial, like your book title.
It is superficial, yeah. Well, what about it?
Well, I mean, do you find that you like it? Do you find that you like to make people famous?
Anderson Cooper says that no one enjoys being famous more than I do. And I took that as kind of a slam for a while. And then I really started to think about it. And I realized I was 40 before I kind of became known. And so to live in New York City for 20 years, just living as a citizen of New York, and then suddenly and slowly you kind of start becoming known, and you start, and all of a sudden, I kind of, as a result, these weird perks happen, like you can start getting into restaurants and you get invited places. And so that part, yeah, I do love that. It's great. People are nicer to me on airplanes. Very stupid way of life things that actually improve your life. There are other things that come as a result of it that aren't that fun, which are, you know, look, I've never had an insecure bone in my body until I became known. And then suddenly, you know, sometimes I go off the air and I'm like, who the hell do you think you are? Like, what do you think you're doing? I mean, just these thoughts coming through my head that I certainly never had. And you start to look at yourself differently, question things. But you know what? I have a really thick skin. And I've known people who are famous for a long time, and I've kind of seen how they've reacted to it. So all in all, it has not had the biggest effect that it's had on me is probably just that I've made more money than I had hoped to, but happily, obviously. And that's been a wonderful thing. But everything else, I just kind of take in stride. I take the subway to Radio Andy every day, and I still love
what they call a regular guy.
I mean, you know, whatever. It's just, you can't can't go all in on fame because it will backfire completely and you'll become a nasty person and it's just a bad idea.
Well, it's Andy Warhol who, in fact, inspired you in some ways with the Andy Warhol Diaries, who made that famous quip that, you know, 2 seconds everybody will have their
Well, that's right. And, you know, my first diary and this one were based on the Andy Warhol Diaries, which is one of my favorite books. And it's 11 years of a pop culture kind of time capsule in his life. And, you know, 20-something years later, I decided to kind of try to emulate that pop culture time capsule in my own books. And I think that I did it pretty good. But I like to say that Warhol would be painting Real Housewives now if he were alive. And I see a small smile beginning to develop on your face, but I mean it because I think he was also fascinated by
smiling because I never would have thought of Andy Warhol in that context.
I know, but you know, look.
But it makes sense.
He had his whole kind of harem of the people that he called superstars from his factory who he made famous. And look, we have, you know, these housewives are my superstars. And I think there would have been something, certainly initially in the run, that he would have gotten a kick out of.
Well, there are those who get a great kick out of those shows.
Yeah.
Thinking about somebody like Camille Paglia, who has said, you know, this is the best thing on television. But then
yes,
there are the detractors. And how serious do you take those detractors? It's not contributing to feminism. It's giving, you know, stereotyped and kind
I'll
of bad views of women and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there was a moment. There's a moment in the book that's pretty funny where Gloria Steinem was on my show. And I was so excited that she was on. And I knew from reading things that she had said that she was not a fan of The Housewives, to put it mildly. And we have a game called Plead the Fifth on my show where I ask three very scandalous questions, and the guest has an opportunity to plead the fifth on one of them, and it's all about how the questions are worded, and we put a lot of time into figuring out the questions, and I thought, you know what, this is a perfect place for me to ask her about The Housewives, and I will say to her, name one redeemable thing about The Housewives, or say one nice thing about The Housewives. And I did it, and we're on live TV, and she said, I absolutely can't, it's a minstrel show, it's this, that, the other. She starts going in, and I said, okay, I gotcha, and I said, you know what, you and I, after the show, are going to have a little debate on the after show about the merit of The Real Housewives, and we'll debate. And I thought this was a great way to get people to watch the after show, which we stream live on our website. I thought, oh, we'll have a lot of streams tonight. I mean, who's not going to watch me and Gloria Steinem debate The Housewives? And of course, we get on the after show, and I realize, you know, again, that I'm such a moron to think that I would have the look. I consider myself smart, but
intellectual, you know, chops to go up against, you know, Gloria Steinem.
Well, Gloria Steinem's gone up against, you know, William F. Buckley.
You should have listened to your mother. Didn't she say you were an intellectual to go on Bill Maher's show?
She was. Yeah, she didn't think I was smart enough to go on Bill Maher. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I lost the debate, but I love The Housewives.
Obviously. Yes. We're talking to Andy Cohen. His new book is Superficial, More Adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. He's host and executive producer of Watch What Happens Live, Bravo's late night interactive talk show, and executive producer of The Real Housewives. And we'll have our listeners, of course, weigh in on The Real Housewives and other matters. But I was struck by a number of things in your book. I mean, the book has humor in it. It has humanity. And pretty decent writer, if I may say
so,
in my English professor hat.
Thanks.
But there's also a poignancy that struck me, not only in the terms of what we were talking about before. You start out with Joan Rivers' funeral, and then I was reminded of a conversation I had with Joan Rivers after the documentary came out about her. And she said essentially, you know, I perform, I'm up, I'm energetic and everything, but when I have to kind of scale down and go home with my dog, as you do, there just seems to be a kind of an emptiness there. So you touch on that, and you also touch on something. I would just like you to talk about these for a moment. Something that was very poignant to me when you came out as gay and told your father, you were what, 21?
Yeah.
And your father gave probably the best possible answer a father could give a son and said, I love you, it's unconditional, you know, it doesn't matter to me. But then it became a little bit of humor because then he asked about a young woman and said, even if she came in and was partially clothed, would it not excite you?
Yes.
So he's kind of testing you, giving you a litmus there and everything.
Yeah.
But so you're writing about pretty serious kind of stuff. You're not associated necessarily with stuff that's that serious, even though there's a lot of melodrama on The Housewives.
Yeah.
But here it is in your book.
Yeah, I just I was in such a groove after writing the first diary that I turned it in and I said, you know what, I'm going to keep going. And I started writing this one a week later, which was, as you said, I think it's like September 9th or something, 2014, which was the day of Joan's funeral. And I said, okay, well, this is as good a place as any to start. I mean, as sad a place as any. But I just was in such a groove that I felt more comfortable sharing things that I don't think I ever would have put. Well, I know that I didn't put them in the last diary, which were, you know, feelings of insecurity or loneliness or, you know, just it, there is that trite, it seems so trite, that showbiz thing of, oh, when the audience is gone and the, you know, it's just.
That's right. It's almost an archetype.
Alone. I mean, it is, yeah. But it's.
Read Sister Carrie.
Yeah, right. It's real, though. It is real. And there, the, you know, there are some moments where I just felt it and I'm feeling it. And I had. Sarah Jessica Parker is a good friend, and she interviewed me at the 92nd Street Y in New York a week or two ago. And she said, you know, there are things that you put in this book that you haven't shared with me about feelings that you've had of, you know, just being alone or questions about your future or what your, you know, what value your life has. She said, you know, these are really deep things, but I'm just surprised because as close of friends as we are, this is not something you've ever shared. And it's true, and it's odd.
Was she including making love to her all night long?
Which, yes.
I mean, because she says that. Right?
Yes, I do say that. But I, you know, but I told her, I said, look, it's also kind of the function of a diary. This was my real diary. This was my real moment where I was having my own inner dialogue. Now, most people don't publish their diary. Maybe after they pass away, like the Warhol diaries. But you know, I decided to publish it, and it was one of the things when the book came out that I was kind of like, oh my God, I'm putting myself out there, and even more now. But this is
makes you feel more vulnerable.
It does, yeah. This is my own version of my own reality show. I just happen to have the final cut, which you can't hand over final cut.
You were a popular kid in high school.
I was pretty popular.
You didn't have any of that kind of angst and anxiety.
No, I was not a jock, but I was popular.
And popular now, but in a very different way, of course. Building rapport with the housewives and being a talk host. Let's talk about that. I mean, I think you've been branded as the first openly gay talk show host.
In late night. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ellen is obviously,
right.
You know, but I'm the only gay guy in late night, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's, you know, I don't consider myself a gay talk show host. I consider myself just a talk show host. Being gay is something that I am, as well as being Jewish and being a Gemini and being sometimes irritating and sometimes funny. But, you know, so, but it's cool. It's nice to be, I'm on a book tour right now, and there were some guys who came last night who were there with their moms, and, you know, the mom was like, thank you. My son started watching you 5 years ago, and seeing you every night smiling, having a good life actually meant something to him. And nothing could make me feel prouder than that, because when I was growing up, it was kind of Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde on TV were kind of the gay role models, and they were kind of step and fetch it, like, you know, characters, and not necessarily role models that you were. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to trash Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde. It was just a different era, and so. If I can be, you know, one of the people on TV that means something to someone who's struggling with their own identity, then I think that's cool.
How important are the – I know you went with Anderson Cooper, who is also a close friend of yours, after Orlando. And you've also – you're a kid from St. Louis, and you also had a certain involvement in caring about and bringing attention to Ferguson. Mm-hmm. How important are social and political issues to you?
They are important. I've learned a lot with this election. It's like my relationship with Twitter, I have to figure out now that Trump is president, and I was so vocal during the election, and I have to figure out how I'm going to navigate this, because there's a reason why talk show hosts don't come out and say who they're for. You wind up isolating half your audience. And I think another thing that we possibly learned from the election is that people in America or people in part of America absolutely have no interest in what a talk show host or a celebrity has to say about politics. And I can respect that.
Unless you're talking about talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh or Alex Jones, yes. We were talking about in the last hour.
But people, that's what people go to them for. People come to Watch What Happens Live to smile. And I think that the way that my entry point to politics on Watch What Happens Live has always been as a gay man, because I am the only gay guy in late night. And if there's something going on that is threatening my rights or civil liberties, then, you know, you're darn well sure that I'm going to talk about it on my show and be as loud and vocal as possible, because
as you just indicated, you see yourself almost as a conduit for smiling.
Yeah, but I think that that's something. Look, I think that I represent, you know, if I am a gay best friend to a lot of women in America who have no gay best friends, then maybe, you know, maybe if I speak up about something that's important to me, I could change their minds and they could say, well, I totally get this. Why should a gay person be discriminated against at work or not be allowed to marry or whatever the issue is?
But your best friend is a proverbial best friend. It's your dog, isn't it?
Yeah, he is my best friend. Yeah, he is.
And, you know, there's something I actually want to ask you about, because I told you I have daughters who like you a lot.
Thank
and
you.
I want to hear what you have to say about this. My younger daughter just got herself a new pup. And we were talking about the mortality, and you write about this.
Yes,
you know,
I do.
You get a dog, and you have maybe 10 years with that
yes.
dog. And, you know, it can be crushing in terms of the attachment you have and the love you have.
Yeah.
You reflect on that?
I think about his death all the time. I mean, way too much. Because of that fleeting. Look, life is fleeting, and I just. This is also my first animal. He's a rescue. I've had him for, I got him in the beginning of the Andy Cohen Diaries, actually. So, I mean, really is a love story, these books between me and the dog also. And I realize in this new book, Superficial, that he has PTSD from being abused in his former, you know, life. Mm-hmm. And he bites a few people in the new book, and I just have to kind of figure out his trigger points. So it's also, you know, it's not all kind of happy and fun with him, but certainly his mortality is something that I think about all the time. And look, it's my first time having that special relationship with an animal. So maybe it seems a little base for people who've, you know, had animals all their lives, but there's nothing like that connection. And it's funny. I was on the book tour and I was back in New York for the last few days. And then I left yesterday and it was like he was over-indexing and cute the last few days that I was with him. I just can't get over that he just keeps getting better and cuter.
Can I quote a friend of mine who said to me once, Michael, you know, your children, your parents, your wife, your family may love you, but no one will love you like your dog. And
it's true.
It's a cliche, but it is definitely true.
It is.
If you just joined us, we're talking Andy Cohen. Bravo's Andy Cohen goes beyond Superficial and spills his secrets the promotional people say, and he is a genius at self-promotion, I must add. And if you'd like to join us, you're welcome to do that. We'd like to hear from you, fans of Andy Cohen or people who have read him. He is an author now. He's also a publisher. How's he doing all this? And also doing some great dancing on his own as well. We welcome your involvement. The toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. And feel free to call us now, 866-733-6786. A number of other ways you can join us with Andy Cohen. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. We welcome your involvement in the program. Again, the book is Superficial, More Adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. We're spending the hour with Andy Cohen, and he's used to drama before he hosted his own Bravo TV show. He produced the Real Housewives reality series, where he managed mascara streak meltdowns on and off the camera. And in his latest book, Superficial, he turns the lens on himself and shares his diary entries about loneliness and search for a relationship. He's the host of Watch What Happens Live and gives us scoop on the behind-the-scenes drama of reality TV and his own off-screen lives. And we're going to go right to your phone calls, and let me begin with Lee. Lee, you're on the air.
Good morning. Andy, where do I start? I have seen you, and I've seen Real Housewives, and it's all just artificial, manufactured, quote-unquote, reality, which you have exploited and ridden to great success. And I'm wondering, what do you see is your relationship to all this fake truth, post-reality show era that has actually allowed us to have and stomach somebody like Donald Trump as a credible figure? I mean, do you not see anything in your relationship to that? And are you now, you know, boo-hooing to us and saying, oh, I'm a real guy, I have real feelings, just like Glenn Beck is doing lately, by the way?
So you blame the Real Housewives for the rise of Donald Trump, am I correct?
No, I don't blame it.
I think she's saying maybe you have some culpability being part of this.
There's a relationship there between the suspension of disbelief, which you've completely exploited, to your credit, I mean, or made the most of, depending on how you want to look at it. But I certainly wouldn't want my gay son to see you as a role model. Maybe Alan Turing, but, you know, anybody who produces a show like this, like Real Housewives, where you try to get people to crack up or women to...
Yeah, but Lee, can I point out to you, I don't have to, Andy can come to his own defense here, but The Real Housewives isn't exactly like Donald Trump's The Apprentice. I mean, they're different universes, but essentially she's saying, you know, you do orchestrate things on reality TV. It's called reality, but, you know, you play for
the emotions.
Well,
listen, we cast people who are pretty much exactly the same on camera as off camera. And so as much as you want to say that it's completely artificial and hyped up, I think that if you meet any of the people that are on the shows, you'll see that they are how they are on the show and off the show in terms of the relationship between Donald Trump and the atmosphere of the Housewives. I don't think the Housewives are put – I think that the reason this show is successful is, first of all, it is meant to be entertainment. It's meant to be escapism. And it is also, I think, popular because people like to judge other people's human behavior. And people know the difference between right and wrong, I would hope. And there's either redemption for people who behave well, or there is – you know, there is a result of bad behavior on the show. And so I don't know. We don't put them out there to all be role models. This is not a show where we're saying this is how you should behave, or these are the people that you should emulate. And, you know, look, I could go on and on.
Well, let me thank Lee for the call. We got a lot of callers and we'll go to as many of you as we can. But I'm looking at another comment from email from Smee, who says, Andy, did you ever think of doing a show featuring nice, respectable people as opposed to the vapid, self-centered, mean-spirited types that are on your shows?
Well, I was in charge of programming at Bravo for 10 years. And while I was there, we had a show called Top Chef, which I won an Emmy for, which is all about, you know, great chefs. We did our first season right here in San Francisco. We had the Rachel Zoe Project. We have a show about life on yachts. We have Project Runway. I was an executive producer of Inside the Actor Studio, Project Greenlight. So The Real Housewives is not the only show that I've done. And, you know, there are a lot of smart people who love The Real Housewives and who can tell the difference and between, you know, behavior that is meant to be accepted or emulated or not. And I won't apologize for The Real Housewives. I love the show. I think that it has replaced the soap opera in our culture today.
It's also a lot cheaper to produce.
That's true. But 40 years ago, people were saying that soap operas were just the death of civilization, and it was disgusting the way people behaved, and you know, it was trash, and it was repulsive, and it was the end of civilization. And here we are, and there are some people who say that about The Housewives, and, you know, I won't buy it. Turn it off if you don't like it. I'm really sorry.
You're not thin-skinned.
No, I'm not thin-skinned.
Because
no.
Recently,
I could have talked to Lee.
Husband,
I could have talked to Lee for longer.
But recently, one of the housewives' husbands went after your show, and there was a big brouhaha over that.
Yeah, I mean, I was live on Radio Andy the other day, and someone called in and said, "Oh, this husband of the housewives is tweeting nasty things about you." And we went over and we read the tweets. I thought it was pretty funny.
More of your calls. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Andy, I absolutely love your shows. I think you're fantastic. I do want to be a little bit critical, though, and piggyback on what Lee had already shared. And it just seems to me, and I'm obsessed with the Real Housewives franchise in part because of what you said earlier, that it's a train wreck and we like to judge people and that sort of thing. But I do feel like it also has, in a way, kind of contributed to the dumbing down of our conversation, because we're taking people who are quote-unquote normal, who in many instances have kind of crazy out there values about, I don't know, family or wealth or celebrity and that sort of thing, and we're elevating them to the status as people who have Twitter followings and who are, you know, incredibly popular to the level of like a Donald Trump kind of character. And I wanted to get, I guess, more feedback from you about that. And I also saw something very interesting on several of your evening talk shows, which was you did polls prior to the election, Trump or Clinton. And I think there were at least two or three polls that I saw where every single one.
There were two. Yeah, Trump. Yeah.
I'm looking at an email from Michael. It says, Andy, how the heck did your Watch What Happens live poll predict Trump's win?
I know. Well, we had two of them. Well, first of all, I don't disagree with you about what you're saying about the elevation of these people into characters in our culture that are considered to have some sort of voice or importance, and that may not be a positive thing. Look, there was a day where celebrities were all revered, and you know, it was like the day when the stars were stars, and now the celebrity culture is what's the word?
It's like octopus is what you were gesturing.
Everyone's a celebrity, and there's all different forms. And look, there was a moment where politicians were meant to be revered too. I'm the Real Housewives guy, and I was disgusted by the debates. And so you have to understand, it bothers me too. So I'm not going to say that the Real Housewives hasn't contributed in some way to the dialogue, but I'm sorry. I think it's an entertainment show, and I'm not gonna go down with it.
There's a writer named Leslie Fiedler, who is one of the most famous literary critics in American literature, and he got ill for a while.
Yeah.
And he watched soap operas, which you alluded to before, and he said, you know, people make fun of them and say they're vulgar and everything, but they give us certain human essences which we have to deal with, which literature also gives us. In fact, Bruce said all literature is gossip, and that's not a bad handle. You understand Yiddish. I mean, some people will say Real Housewives, a lot of yenting, basically.
Yes, yeah.
It is yenting.
Well, I think that the thing about it is that if this show was only harping and screaming and fighting, and it was only one it was only that one thing, it would not still be going on 11 years later. There are, first of all, it's very funny. There are moments of great humor. There are moments of redemption. There are moments of sympathy where you actually relate to some of these people. And so I think it's easy to, the loud stuff, the table flip, and these moments that a glass of wine being thrown, these are the moments that are played and played and replayed.
I've got emails about both of those, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure. These are the moments that if you think about the Housewives, that's what you see. And I get it. I get it. But it's not the only moment. We there are sometimes 20 hours of a season, and it's not all that.
Talk about the polls. Let's get back to the polls.
Oh, so the polls. Well, that was really interesting because we had twice. I said, I want to know who you think is going to win or who you're voting for. And the first two polls, Donald Trump won 68% to 32%, I think, or 66 to 34. And we were like, whoa. Now, we found out that there were Trump people who went on Reddit and said, vote in these polls now. And so we think that they could have
skewed.
Yeah, we think they got skewed because also there was a highly unusual. It was an unusually high amount of votes for the polls. So I don't know. But and then look, after the election, I was like, look, my audience called it. So what can I say?
Oh, you become a soothsayer.
I mean, well, the other thing is, it's like, look, also maybe people who are more likely to vote in a poll on a TV show were more likely to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it.
And we'll get some more of our callers on. Ben, you're on.
Yes, good day. I have a question about what you said, how your gay identity in some degree informs where you stand politically. And as a Jew myself, I was curious as to how being a Jew influences that as well. And particularly, and I got to go back to it, the degree in which you, along with many others, have vulgarized, and I mean that in both meanings of the word, of the people as well as lowest common denominator, vulgarized our culture as well as our politics.
Vulgarized the Jewish culture?
No, in the American culture. And as a Jew, not that Jews are the only people who need to care about this sort of nonsense. All Americans do.
Right.
But many Jews like to tap the conceit that because of World War II, we're particularly in tune to that. I don't know if that's true, but nevertheless, I'd like to hear your opinion on that.
I don't know. I personally have a strong Jewish identity on Watch What Happens Live, and I very much am, you know, culturally prominently relate to my people. I go out. I've been speaking at huge Jewish organizations for the last few weeks to, you know, probably several thousand Jewish Housewives fans over the last few weeks. So, but.
Well, I don't know that there's a kind of in the question, maybe a kind of notion of elitism among Jews that they don't like what's vulgar, what's seen as vulgar actually comes from the word vulgate, which means of the people, you know,
right.
The common people, in fact.
Right.
So there's a whole sense of, I don't know, maybe elitism. You have a lot of fans, obviously, who are Jewish and who are strong Jews in every way. I can attest to that. Let me thank the caller, though, and move on to more calls. We go to you, Rachel. You're on.
I'm Rachel. Hi there.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
Andy, I saw you last night with Anna Sell, and you were amazing.
Thank you. I had a great time at the Castro last night.
I could tell. I love how relatable you were. And my friend Naomi and I waited in line almost 2 hours while we were in our seats waiting, and it was totally worth it to meet you. And we gave you a card, and I cannot believe how gracious you are.
Thank you.
With everyone.
Thanks.
And how you just kept smiling, and it was... It was such a highlight, and I love Radio Andy. I listen to it all the time because I work from home.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And you really inspired me. And I think all these callers and comments are really funny. They're very San Francisco.
Well,
like you're getting a real slice.
I love San Francisco.
Thank you for the call. Yeah.
And I love a good debate.
Well, do you want to lead some debates, maybe? You do that all the time.
I know. Listen,
maybe we
I
can get
calling,
you instead of Anderson Cooper
Anderson
in the next
Cooper,
presidential debate.
I kept calling Anderson saying, these debates have turned into Housewives reunions. And that didn't make me happy. And so, you know, I don't think that I want to respect my politicians. I don't want them acting like Housewives. Okay. I don't. And I'm the Housewives guy. So
by the way, aren't a number of them not housewives? A number of them are divorced single and so forth.
Well, it's the idea is it's a wink to what the idea of it, what it means to be a housewife in 2017 or 2008 or whatever year we started.
Here's Smee, who writes, I'm a huge fan of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. The show has come to mean a lot to me in the last few years. I do feel that, especially during reunion shows, Andy Cohen tends to exploit the women by pitting them against each other, almost like Jerry Springer. Of course, the housewives have their own feuds without Andy's help, but can't help but see some patriarchal exploitation.
I am an Esther at those reunions. I do. That's what I am there to do. I am there to mix it up. But what we also like to try to do is get people to own their behavior and somehow have some resolution and move on. And is it meant to be dramatic? Yes. And is it meant to be entertaining? Yes.
Here's a tweet from Julian. Andy, what's next for Bravo in primetime? More Housewives? More reality programming?
Well, Bravo's moving into scripted. I am no longer in charge of programming at Bravo, so I can't tell you. I know they have their third scripted show about to start, and Watch What Happens Live is moving into a new studio next in January, which we just announced this morning. And, you know, it's like moving from a Tic Tac to a studio apartment. It's not that much bigger. It will still be intimate. It'll still be live, and it'll still feel like the clubhouse.
One more tweet. I don't know what you want to do with this question,
but God,
who's the biggest liar you know?
Who's the biggest liar I know?
That's the question.
Who's the biggest liar? I know a lot of exaggerators. I don't know a lot of bold-faced liars.
All right, reflect on that. Maybe we'll go to another call. In the meantime, Michaela joins us. Michaela, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Michael, for taking my call. And Andy, thank you for bringing the type of programming that you do out there. I really do think that while it's very easy to criticize the show and say that, you know, you're just putting garbage in front of us and you're teaching us all of the things not to do, I also think that we need to take responsibility, and especially in this election climate, you know, after everything that we've been through, people need to take responsibility to be critical thinkers as well. And we need to, you know, in essence, be grateful for shows like yours for showing us perhaps what not to do, and also to make that effort, because if the show is on the air and there are people watching it, and apparently there are, you know, millions of people who are watching it, that should tell us something about what's going on with our culture, and we should all take responsibility, especially now, to do something about it, to put on our thinking caps and figure out how we can be better participants and much more vocal about the type of programming we claim to say we want.
Thank you. I have to say, when people behave badly on these shows, I don't get feedback like, oh, I loved them behaving badly. There, people are, you know, what I hear from people is, how could they? And what, you know, oh my God, how could this happen? So it's not, I do feel like inherently people know right from wrong. But, you know, as we look at what's going on politically, maybe, I don't know.
Well, let me thank the caller. You have a very serious side to you. I mean, it's coming across here in this interview. And I think these kinds of challenges suggest that maybe you want to take more seriously some of the effect of what you've produced here and what you've spawned.
Look, it is a dialogue that we have.
We being your whole team.
Yes, of course.
And any resolution, since you use that word, in terms of this dialogue?
Look, there. Look, we all look. I can't say it enough. We love the show, so.
Your hearts are in it.
Yeah.
What do you think about the impact, though, of the show? I mean, have you ever been able to quantify that or provide any kind of metric to it? I hear people talking about good effects, bad effects.
You know what? It's weird. Last night I signed probably 600 books and took 600 pictures. And if I heard it once, I heard it like 25 times, people saying, I could be fighting with my daughter or my sister or my best friend, but we could watch The Housewives and then we have something to talk about that we can just agree on. And it just takes us out of our lives. People who said, I met two women who had cancer last night who said, you know what? This makes me escape my own problems. I look at these women and I laugh, and I laugh at them, and I laugh with them, and I hate them, and I love them. And it just makes me take my mind off of myself. It's like guilt-free gossip. And so there have been many things throughout pop culture that have been attributed to the end of civilization. And I know for some people, this show is that. And I say that, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about having 200 channels. There are many other shows that are not the end of civilization.
Underneath this, though, I hear kind of a sincere wish to do good, or hope to do good.
Well, look, I mean, sure, yes.
Let me go to more of our callers. Okay, we get Janelle from Carmel. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi, Andy.
Hi.
I just wanted to respond to some earlier comments regarding a reality TV show responsible for dumbing down America, where I actually think a lack of education funding, standardized testing in our schools has become a retreat from actual critical thinking in America. And so I actually love your shows, and I have friends who are shocked that I do. I work in a very high-stress hospital environment, and like you just spoke about, you know, the patients, the people that have cancer, it's a bit of an escape. And if we're so lacking in our critical thinking skills that we can't discern entertainment from reality, it's maybe we really need to look at what we're doing in our school system.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that's why I always say, like, look, if you put something on, I want to believe the best, which is that the audience can watch and think, okay, well, that was horrible, or that was great, or I admire that, or I don't admire that.
Let me thank you. I'm sorry, you had something else you want to say, Janelle? Go ahead.
Oh, it's this human symphony of vulnerabilities that you're sharing.
Right.
And it's outrageous, but yet, you know, it also can help us maybe laugh at ourselves and just take a break from the chaos.
Yeah, it's entertainment, and I thank you for that call. In fact, looking at some comments here, this is a listener who writes, Andy, how are cities receiving you in areas that support Trump? And I love the Housewives show. They are entertaining, and I applaud the series for showing all facets of people. I grew up in Newport Beach in the OC and can tell the difference between entertainment and choosing role models.
Thank you. I mean, people seem to be – look, people who come to my signings are obviously people who want to come meet me, so they're not coming to throw eggs at me.
You have a lot of adoration. Does that sometimes go to your head?
I mean,
everybody's vulnerable to that.
It makes me feel good. It goes to my head. It gives me a heart boner.
Okay.
Okay.
There's something to enter into my lexicon.
Yes, please.
Actually, speaking of such, you talk about flirting with
yes.
people on the air. I think it was Bob Harper you had on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trainer and yep. TV show, The Big Loser
yep.
or whatever. And I guess the gaydar was working and
yeah,
you were
yeah.
flirting with him. And
yeah.
But you flirt with heteros, too. You're not flirting with me. I'm too old, obviously. But you do flirt with people, don't you?
I do.
And men
I'm
and
a
women.
Big flirt. Absolutely. I love to flirt. I love, yes, I have a good time.
This is a tweet from a listener. Says, like a weird fugue state, hearing Andy Cohen, my nighttime entertainment on the morning KQED Forum show.
Good, I love it.
And the listener says, Housewives of Silicon Valley? What does Andy think?
You know what? We did a reality show called Silicon Valley, which didn't really work. But we've done some casting there. I haven't really come up with anything.
Somebody says, this is a tweet, Vicky Gunvalson has seriously worn out her welcome. Would you consider Brianna to replace her? Now we're really getting in the weeds
that's
here.
That's specific. Yeah. Yeah, that's specific.
Andy, what does the real mean in the title, Real Housewives?
That's funny. Well, you know what? The Real Housewives came when Desperate Housewives was a big show on ABC. That's when we said, you know what? It was our play on the show Desperate Housewives. We said, oh, well, we'll call this the Real Housewives.
It's a question from a listener. It says, when casting, are some housewives deemed too normal to be entertaining? I've always noticed that the more normal women get kicked off The Bachelor first.
No, I think, first of all, I think it's always good to have a few voices of reason on the show. So, yes, you need some islands. You need some pockets of relatability.
You go for that mix.
Yeah, I think you need the whole spectrum.
By the way, you're okay now, right? You had that dot on your head and Kelly Ripa saw
it. I did. I had a dot on my lip and it was melanoma and it was removed and I'm fine. Thank
Boy,
you.
Yeah. A lot of gratitude for her.
Absolutely.
For
she kept pushing me to go to the doctor.
Here's Mark. Mark, join us. You're on the air on Forum.
Hi, guys. Michael, thanks again for your addiction story the other day. It was great. And Andy, I'm so glad to be talking to you. I actually made
Wait a minute. Somebody may confuse that. I have no personal addictions that I know of, but we did a show on addiction,
oh, no.
A new Surgeon General's report.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. To clarify, that's all.
But Andy, I just want to say when you were talking about your dog, my dog Tank is my total best friend, and I'll be sitting there watching Below Deck or Ladies of London, and I look at him lying there, and I think, oh, my God, he's going to be gone.
Right.
And I freak out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just so real. But I wanted to tell you, my best friend died last week of cancer, lymphoma, and we were friends in New York for 35 years. And I have to tell you, if it weren't for my dog, it would have been the saddest thing. But I'm afraid that Bravo kind of ruined the goodbye part because I said to him as he was lying there, what's your status at the bank? And he opened his eyes and I just said, oh my God, I hope he remembers me and not Nene before he passes.
That's amazing.
So I think you're wonderful. I think it's great.
Thanks.
And
I appreciate
doing it.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah, I am too. Thank you, Mark, though, for calling. And again, Andy Cohen's book is Superficial, More Adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. And let's go to more of your calls. And let's welcome Kate onto the air. Kate, you're on.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Andy. It's really cool to be calling, and I always watch what happens on recorded, so I never get a chance to call in. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Big fan, lived in New York the last 13 years, just moved to California. But I just wanted to say, I've always had to defend Real Housewives, too, to my friends. I was never a soap opera fan, lots of literature, lots of nerds, so, you know, high art. But what I love is that it does show, if we can't be honest about the worst of us, and all of us have the ability to be an awful human being, and all of us have the ability to be amazing human beings. So I think what it does is it shows the bad parts, but it also shows the pathway out of it. And if we want to sanitize and pretend that none of us can just be rude and stupid sometimes, we're not going to get anywhere. So just thoughts on that. And, you know, I think, like, the left kind of sanitizes and wants to pretend that we aren't bad sometimes. And I don't know if you have thoughts on that. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks for the call, Kate.
Well, I think it's – thank you, by the way, and it's nice to talk to you. I think it's – look, it goes back. Yeah, it goes back to what I was saying, and I think you're right about the human behavior thing. I think it's good and it's bad and it's redeeming, and I feel like a broken record, actually.
Well, we're coming to the end of the program, and I have one question to end with. Okay. With you. What drives you?
What drives me is everything. Just being passionate about whatever I'm doing. I mean, the cool thing for me is I've expanded beyond the Housewives, and I've got this radio channel, which has a lot of political programming. I'm starting a book imprint, which is going to be all nonfiction books from Holt. And you'll be interested to know that I have a couple very kind of feminist books that I'm working on. And
redemption.
Anything that I'm interested in.
You follow.
You know, yeah.
It ignites and you go.
I follow my passion. Yeah.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Enjoyed having you. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Again, Andy Cohen's book is Superficial. More adventures from the Andy Cohen Diaries. You can continue this discussion online by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our interns are Maxine Sheffer-Wolf and Brandon Yu. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. And executive producer is Joanne Wallace. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.